There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all argument, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Good morning. My name is Hugh Douglas. I'm an alcoholic. I like to start off these little sermons with that quotation out of this book, out of a spiritual experience, for a couple of reasons. I am convinced that it is that contempt prior to investigation that causes us to give out a damn sight more 30-day tips in Alcoholics Anonymous than we do one-year birthday cakes. Contempt prior to investigation. And I've had a lot of people tell me that they have trouble living by principles. I don't think living by principles is the problem. I think it's the principles we've lived by that's the problem. If you have any doubt about what contempt is, I'll tell you what it was for me. I believe that anyone that thought that I was going to pattern my way of life after something thought up by a shyster New York stockbroker and a butt doctor from Ohio had another thing coming. Now, I would like to take a moment or two out to say something before I start talking this morning. And I would certainly like to thank the committee for inviting us up here. You people are the most friendly people I have found anywhere. You have a beautiful city. And while the city may be young, the hospitality is not. Vaguely reminiscent of what is today called first century Christianity, where one person helps another. I think it's laudable. Your scenery is outstanding. Absolutely beautiful. We were lucky enough to go over to Banff and Lake Louise for lunch. And I certainly appreciate Bob taking us over there, and I certainly appreciate the attention that we've been given by Don and his wife. And I'm not going to mention her name because I'm a male chauvinist. Well, Carol, what the hell? And I would also like to welcome you newcomers to Alcoholics Anonymous. Last night at the countdown, there were a considerable number of you. And I would like to tell you, if no one has, that you're a part of a fellowship that has astounded science for a great many years. This is the largest group of people anywhere in the world that have found a way to go from adolescence to senility without ever bothering to pass through maturity. So welcome. And if you are having a problem quitting drinking, I would remind you that quitting drinking is like making love to a gorilla. And you are not through until the gorilla is through. But I am sure that if you keep coming back and pay some attention to what you laughingly call your sponsor, the chances are that you too will be able to one day grasp what this way of life is all about. Now, I really believe that a lot of people in AA, especially newcomers, don't believe that their life has served any purpose whatsoever to this point, and I think you're wrong about that. And I think I can tell you a little story that'll prove it to you. It seems like some time ago a well-known evangelist died and was waiting in St. Peter's outer office for his interview, and a well-known priest walked in, and he was ushered right into St. Peter's office. Any evangelist could understand this because the priest was well-known and well-loved. And a few minutes later, a well-known Catholic or Jewish rabbi walked in, and he was well-known and well-loved and was immediately ushered right into St. Peter's office. Any evangelist could understand this also. But a little while later, a little old lady came in, and the girl behind the desk jumped up, ran over, threw her arms around the girl, and she said, "Mary, Mary, welcome. We're glad to see you. Go right in. He's been waiting for you." And this bothered the evangelist. And he said, "I can understand about the priest. I can understand about the rabbi." He said, "But would you tell me why that little old lady got in front of me?" She said, "I'll be glad to." She said, "When that girl was only 18 years old, her father gave her a brand new red convertible for her birthday. And in the 2 years that she drove that red convertible on the streets of Calgary, she put the fear of God in the hearts of more people than you did in 40 years of preaching hellfire and brimstone. So perhaps your life has not been a total loss. You have just simply served as a bad example." Now, I don't talk too much about what the drinking was like, and I've got three pretty good reasons for doing this. I never developed a fascination for the LAPD version of the way I drank. I never got overly fond of my first wife's version of the way I drank, and I don't remember how I drank. And if you drank like me, you probably don't remember too much of it either. What I do remember was rather boring, and I believe that if I'd have known that being a drunk was going to be a mark of distinction in my declining years, I would have taken notes or had someone keep them, but I didn't. And I've always admired these people who can give you a blow-by-blow description of their drinking. I've always liked a liar, but you know the way it is, I guess. What I try to talk about is what I've learned from this book and this way of life in the last almost 28 years. And that's what I intend to talk to you about this morning, this book. And the title of this book is extremely important, and it's obvious that a lot of people have never bothered to read it. It's called Alcoholics Anonymous. And AA stands for Alcoholics Anonymous. It does not stand for altered attitudes, associated assholes, or anything. It just stands for Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you will keep it that simple, it will probably work. If you do not, it might not. And I intend to keep it just as simple as I possibly can this morning. And I would like to thank this young man for the introduction, although I am never sure when they introduce you at an AA meeting whether they're introducing you or insulting you. It was still a fairly nice introduction, I guess. When you start to read this book, you will find that it is probably one of the most poorly written, archaic pieces of literature that has ever been foisted on the American public. It is extremely difficult to read because of the way Bill wrote it, and he wrote it that way intentionally. And what you will find is that he tells you in one spot what he's going to tell you. A little while later, he tells you what he wants you to know. And a couple of pages after that, he tells you what he's told you, because he knows you'll damn well miss it in one of those places. So he tells you three different times. And you will find that no matter how many times you read this book or how long you have read this book, that you will never, ever be able to quote it exactly the way it was written. I've tried many times. I had a lot of trouble with two things when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and one of them was this book. One of them was the people. Now, I don't know about you, but I'll tell you about me. If you live in California like I do, and if you're familiar with Hollywood and North Hollywood like I am, and I came into the North Hollywood group in the summer of 1960, and you've got a bunch of people running around hollering men with the men and women with the women, you get just a little bit leery of what they're talking about. And if a little while later some guy comes up and grabs you in a bear hug and puts his cheek up against yours and says, I love you, you damn well know you've really done it to yourself this time. And I was told now in a lot of meetings, I've heard it said that if you don't have the funds, if you'll see someone after the meeting's over, the Secretary of Treasury or someone, they'll see you leave with this book on your terms. I don't know if you do that here in Canada or not, but if you do, and if you are new, take them up on that and get this book on your terms. I don't care if you got $1,000 in your pocket, because it will probably be the last damn thing you're ever going to get in Alcoholics Anonymous on your terms. So take them up on that and get it over with to start with. Now I got myself what you people laughingly call a sponsor. Back then we called them adversaries. And he didn't make that suggestion to me. In fact, what he said to me, he said, I've heard a little of your story. I think you're a thief. And we have a book around here for sale. I want you to buy the book, and I'm going to see the receipt. And if I see you with the book without a receipt, I'm going to call law and have you arrested. And I thought he would, so I bought the book, showed him a receipt, and started to read the book. And I read it exactly the way you read a law book, looking for the loopholes. And there are a lot of loopholes in this book. Except when to do so would injure them or others is a fantastic loophole. We are not saints. That's an all-encompassing loophole. However, I would advise you to be a little careful, because when you jump through those loopholes, they have a tendency of closing up just before your neck clears and you're going to be left hanging out to dry. Now, I made the mistake one day of going to this guy and asking him if he'd mind explaining to me what was in this book, and he said, no, of course not, I'll be glad to. Now, he died here about 3 years ago, and I'm sure he died on his terms, not on God's. And he never, in his life, to the best of my knowledge, ever answered a question directly or done anything without some kind of an attachment. And what he said to me was this. He said, if you'll tell me what's on the first page, I'll tell you what's on all the rest of the pages. Sounded like a simple enough task for a man of my ability, so I memorized what I thought was the first page in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought it was a page that said, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. And I memorized that page word for word, just like it was written, comma for comma, went up and repeated it to him. He said, that's not it. I said, it is. He said, it is not. I said, it is. Went home, read it. It was. Went back, told him so. And he said, my young friend, that is not the first page in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I memorized every page from there forward in this book. The table of contents, some of them gave me a hell of a start, but damn it, I memorized them. And every time I'd go up to him and repeat it, he'd say, that's not it. And finally, one day, I opened a book up, and I opened it up to this page that says Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought, I got him. I went up to him this one day, and I said, Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, what's the matter with you? You nuts? And I said, no, sir, I'm not. You told me that if I told you what was on the first page of this book, you would tell me what was on all the rest of the pages. And he said, that I would, my young friend, but you have not. And with that, he reached over, picked up a book, and held it up so I could see it like this. And he said, this, my friend, is the first page in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if it has taken you over 3 months to learn about a page with nothing on it, how long do you think it's going to take to learn about a page with a printing on it? Once again, he'd made a fool out of me. But then he said something extremely important, I think. He said, that's the last time the white should ever bother you. From now on, just read the black. It'll make more sense. When you read this book, and you start out with a doctor's opinion, you will probably be reading the most graphic example of alcoholism and the best explanation of it I have ever read anywhere. And I read many books, articles, and treatises written by some very learned people, and every one of them is either an attempt to extend, explain, or elaborate on what Silkworth put in his book almost 50 years ago. And obviously they have been written by some very well-meaning people who don't have the first damned knowledge of what alcoholism really is. You know what Silkworth said about us? He said men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. And while this effect is injurious, it is so elusive that we soon cannot differentiate between the true and the false, and we become convinced that our alcoholic life is the only normal one. I'll tell you a remarkable thing about that, incidentally. If you are convinced that your way of life is the only normal way of life, no matter what goes wrong, it's never your fault. It's their fault, her fault, his fault, but it isn't yours. After all, you're living the only way life should normally be lived, and they are out of step. What do you think the effect produced by alcohol is to an alcoholic? Jails, sanitariums, fights? No. For me, alcohol done something for my ego that nothing else did. It made me feel different. It made me believe I was something I was not. A better lover, better dancer, better businessman, better everything. And then it clipped me from the blind side like a quarterback being clipped by his own fullback, not knowing exactly what went wrong and never believing it was the alcohol. And if you're curious about what alcoholism is, it's really very simple to understand. It simply means when I take one drink, I want another one. And over any considerable period of time, this will change into a need that is beyond human control. And left unchecked, I will die or go insane or both. It's simple. The only known cause of alcoholism, incidentally, is alcohol. I don't give a damn what anyone else may tell you. Nothing else causes alcoholism. It is not caused by women. You can't drink a woman. But alcohol causes alcoholism. I had a guy tell me once, he said, Coke is just nothing but a real dry martini. That son of a bitch had a poor bartender. He never knew. He didn't understand. Unfortunately, so many don't. Another drunk can understand another drunk, can't he? And before I get too carried away, I want to tell you, fellas, something. I would advise you to make this program this time around. Because if you don't, you're going to come back as a woman alcoholic. Now, don't you girls sit out there and laugh, because if you don't make it, you're going to come back as an Al-Anon. Over any considerable period, it will get worse. It never gets better. But before we get carried away with this, let's understand something. Drunks, listen for a moment. If it had not have been for Lois and Ann, there would have been no Alcoholics Anonymous. And don't ever forget that. Those women, with their courage to stand by us while we were doing what we were doing, was something I don't have, no more than Tom had. I admire you. I don't envy you, but I do admire you. But just be careful, fellas, because it can get worse, no matter how bad it's been. And then you know what else Silkworth said about us? He said we're restless, irritable, and discontented. Unless we can have a few drinks, which we know will bring immediate relief, and which we see others taking with impunity, it doesn't bother them. But once we succumb to the desire again, as so many do, the phenomena of craving develops, and we pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful, vowing never to drink again. And this will happen over and over and over. And unless we can experience some kind of a complete psychic change, there is very little hope for our recovery. Now, incidentally, the next paragraph in the doctor's opinion holds out some hope. But because I had to buy this book and read it, if you want to know what that hope is, you can buy your own damn book and read it, because I ain't going to tell you what it is. Now, when you start to read this book and you read chapters 2 through 7, you'll be reading only about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, oddly enough. And there is one thing in that part of the book, in the basic text, that's extremely important that you rarely hear anyone talk about. Because if you look at this program and you look at those steps, there's not one thing in there that says that when you do this, you will never drink again. So what are we really trying to do now? What is it that we're trying to accomplish? That one sentence says, laying the drink question aside, we can see where our way of life would have been wholly unsatisfactory. So if you believe that you can come in here, stay sober, and continue to do the same damn things you've always done, you're kidding no one but yourself. It won't work. It can't work. Laying the drink question aside, our way of life would have been wholly unsatisfactory. And what this whole way of life is about is the way a drunk can stay sober and enjoy it. And you've experienced that joy this weekend with the people you've known, with the people you've heard, with the friends you've made. And a spiritual way of life is a very simple way of life. It is not complicated and it is not religious. It simply means something a little different than you've ever heard before. You know what human envy is, of course. Inspiration is identically the same thing on a spiritual level. And now instead of envying what people have, you're inspired to do your best because of what they have done. And you'll find that instead of getting all you now want all you've got, and your life has begun to change somewhat. And now marriages can last past the honeymoon, sometimes for a lifetime. And don't tell me, hey, marriages don't work, I know better. I've been married to Beverly 17 years come August, and she was 6 years sober when she was lucky enough to find me. So they work. Believe me, they work. If you are not selfish. But if you're selfish, business won't work, marriage won't work, nothing works, because you want what you want and you don't give a damn about anyone else. You just don't care. When you read chapters 2 and 3, you'll be reading only about step 1. No more, no less. Did you ever read that step? I thought all it said was I had to admit that I was an alcoholic. Hell, I'd do that on the way at the end of a bar. But there was one thing in that step I did not like. When I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, I had made and spent $963,000. And I'd been given one of the biggest medals they can hang around a soldier's neck in this country, or in my country. And you weren't going to tell me I was powerless over anything or anyone. People were a commodity. You bought and sold them like anything else. So from the very beginning, I had difficulty with this way of life. And I had difficulty with it because of one word that you rarely hear, but I'll tell you what that one word is. It's backwards. Every alcoholic is backwards. It's not that you're right or wrong any more than anyone else. It's just every damn thing you do it backwards. I had a friend of mine down south. He bought 4 brand new tires on sale, got a hell of a price. He didn't own a car. And if you ever notice them light candles on a cake, and there's a lot of candles, I don't care how long the guy that lights them has been sober. He lights the outside first and burn the hell out of his hands, trying to light the inside last. You see it over and over. So everything we do, we just do backwards. Now, the normal human being, he thinks, feels, acts, and feels in that order. If he don't like the way he feels, he don't do it again. Not an alcoholic. He feels first, reacts to the feeling, and then he thinks about it. Usually, how the hell can I get out of this one? And if you don't believe that, fellas, and I want you girls not to listen for a moment, but if you were living in a very small, small town, you got a one-girl cat house, and she has one of these other social diseases we talk about occasionally, and both an alcoholic and a non-alcoholic visit with her, because it rains on the just and the unjust equally as well, both will get that other social disease. The difference is that the non-alcoholic will not go back until at least they've changed girls. But the alcoholic goes back the next night. He believes this time it's going to be different. And besides that, he fell in love on the first visit. So you see that some of our difficulties are rather unique because we just do things backwards. And when you understand that this book is written backwards, you will understand AA far better. Now, I was in the Marine Corps for a while. And believe me, surrender to win is not a Marine Corps axiom. And I was in business for several years. And keep it by giving it away is not a business motto. You put it in your pocket, put your hand in your pocket, and get the hell out of town, but you don't give nobody nothing. So you'll find out that this whole concept is totally backwards from any other discipline you may have encountered anywhere. And do you realize how backwards it is when you ask people like me and Tom and others to get up before you, like Billy, and talk for an hour from memory without a script? That's never done anywhere else. Everywhere else they got notes. We're the same people who couldn't remember where the hell we hid our car, and now you want us to remember? My God. And the funny part of it is we do it. Powerless over alcohol. 3 steps in this way of life mention power. The first, the second, and the 11th. All of them mentioning power. And when you read chapter 4, you'll be reading only about step 2. And there's where most of us begin to have our troubles. We beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. What do you think it takes to make an alcoholic beg? A broken marriage? Ah, get the hell out of here. What does he beg for? It's got to be important, isn't it? And we're not fearless or thorough from the very start, because we take step two and read it, and then we twist it. We have made counselors, we have made psychiatrists wealthy because we wanted to be restored to sanity, but we didn't want to come to believe. Or we come into Alcoholics Anonymous and try to become a power greater than ourselves and fail miserably. We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. It's so simple when you keep it simple. And when you read the first paragraph in that chapter, you see something remarkable, because they say in the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. And they're not talking about the alcoholic and the non-drinker. I used to say Al-Anon, but some of them people drink more than I did. No, they're talking about the alcoholic and the heavy drinker, and what's the difference between them. And you find out in chapter two that the heavy drinker, given sufficient reason, can quit. Problems of money, job, family, health. These things are causes for him to quit. Did you quit for those reasons, or did I? No, we couldn't quit. They did quit. And then it lists the only two symptoms that are listed anywhere in Alcoholics Anonymous in this book for alcoholism, and there are only two. It's as if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when you're drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. If this be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. If that's true, would you tell me now why so many people waste so much of their time on this planet trying to become emotionally stable and have so little to do with the spiritual way of life? Hell, if you're crazy, just learn to enjoy it. Don't try to fix it. You give out cakes in Alcoholics Anonymous for physical sobriety. Didn't that ever occur to you? We don't give them out for emotional stability. If we gave them out for that, Beverly would never get a cake. We got a guy down here in the South. Some of you people probably heard of this guy, Clancy. He's got almost 30 goddamn years on this program. Crazy as a bedbug. But he goes back every year claiming he didn't have a drink, and they give him a cake with another candle, and that's all it takes. That's all it takes. Alcoholics Anonymous is not a substitute psychiatrist's couch. It's the way a bunch of drunks can get together and laugh about what they don't remember. That's all it is. We agnostics. Now, I'd like to explain something to you right now. I was born and raised in southern Missouri in the Baptist Bible Belt, and there has never been a case of agnosticism in that part of the country yet. I believed in God and Jesus Christ then, and I still do. That has not changed one damn little bit. And I've had a lot of people tell me that mentioning God or Christ from podiums like this to people like you is going to drive some of you drunks out of here. It might, but booze will drive you back, so in the end, we're going to break even. If you don't want to hear about God, a power greater than yourself, or a higher power, then I would suggest you never bother to read this book, because you'll find it is mentioned some 228 different times. And if you don't want to hear about Christ or the devil, don't read page 11, because both of them are mentioned on that one page. In fact, it might be necessary for you to try to find another way to stay sober, and after you failed miserably, if you survive, come on back. And we'll talk about this spiritual concept that Alcoholics Anonymous has become so world famous for in the last 53 years and 2 days. Spiritual, not religious. Now on page 52 in this one chapter, you'll find 8 results of being either an atheist, agnostic, or an egoist. I didn't say egotist, even though some people say in my case that too would have applied. What I said was egoist. You know what an egoist is? An egoist is a person that while he knows all about God, he believes only in himself. And if you believe only in yourself, you will think only of yourself. And it isn't long before you'll live your life as if you was in a room full of mirrors, and every human emotion that goes out bounces right back. And if you feel any kind of pity, it will always be self-pity. And you will find great frustration when you try to get other people to feel as sorry for you as you feel for yourself, and these callous, indifferent idiots just won't do it. Self-pity. Now, I said there were 8 results. I also said I had to buy this book and read them, so if you want to find out what they are, you buy your own damn book and read them. I'm not going to tell you what they are. But I'll tell you what 2 of them are. One of them says we could not control our emotional natures. One of them says we were having trouble in our personal relationships. Oh, that's a beautiful word. Do you know where else relationships is graphically mentioned in this book? In chapter 11, where it says, see to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. Now tell me, fellas, is it possible most of the relationships we got involved with over the years went to hell so quickly because we went into them with what's in it for me? What can I get out of it? And we never existed. We never even had a chance. Perhaps it's something we should all look at from time to time. And quite often I hear people talk about something that I think is extremely dangerous. They just don't yet understand what they're saying. Have you heard someone say, I want self-worth? I want self-esteem? Watch it. My book says, abandon yourself to God as you understand God. It does not say one thing about glorifying yourself in any way. Esteem has value, of course. It is the esteem in which you hold me, not in which I hold myself. What am I worth to you? I know what I'm worth to me. Selfish and self-centeredness is the root cause of every damned one of our problems. Selfishness. We are God's kids, every one of us. Every one of us somewhat different and yet alike. And when we begin to understand the we in Alcoholics Anonymous, we begin to understand what sobriety is, both for ourselves and others. And while they tell us in this book that we absolutely insist on enjoying ourselves, let's never forget we cried. Let's never forget that many still are. And we can help if we're thinking of others along with thinking of ourselves. But self-esteem will turn to arrogance and self-worth to conceit. And we'll be right back where we started. Because we just didn't understand to turn ourself over to God as we understood God. And become one of God's kids. And just enjoy one another. As the saint said, little children, love one another. Love one another. You people here in Calgary know what it's like. You know what it's like to help plant and help reap and help harvest. You know what it's like to be flooded out and blown out. You know what it's like to be helped. I don't have to tell you about that. Just practice this principle in every damned one of your affairs. That's all you're asked. Not complicated, not difficult, rather easy. How it works. Did you ever ask an old-timer in AA how it works, and he says, trust God and clean house? You want to know where he got it? Out of chapter 7, where it says, burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he too can get well, regardless of anyone. The only condition being that he trusts in God and clean house. Now, before I get into the significance of that in chapter 5, there's something else I'd like to dwell on for a moment or two, and that's a small portion of chapter 5 we read in, well, my God, they're reading it all over the country now, all over the world, I guess. At the International 3 years ago, they read it at all the meetings I attended. You read it here in Calgary. They read it in Boston. They read it in Virginia. They read it every place I've been, Missouri, Oklahoma, Nebraska, Washington, Oregon, all over. You know what's wrong with reading it in every meeting? You don't pay one damn bit of attention to what's being read. That's what's wrong with it. You're too busy looking at the girl's legs next to you, thinking what you're going to do when you can get the hell out of here, but you don't pay no attention to what's being read. I've heard a lot of people say you can work this program any way you want to. Maybe you can, but let me tell you what the book says. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, and there is no S on path, only one path. It says there are two kinds of people ain't going to make it. Those who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. There they're talking about the smart ass and the wet brain, incidentally. Next time one of you have a little drinky poo, or some of you fire off some of them pocket rockets you carry around with you, and you're sitting out here on one of these street corners trying to figure out which one you are, I want to tell you right now, a wet brain can't think. You'll know which one you are, I just told you. Probably the most misquoted statement in all of AA is also in this part we read. Have you ever heard someone say, if you want what we have, that is the philosophy of a thief. It has absolutely nothing to do with the AA way of life, and it's not in the book. You know what it does say? If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. Have you made that decision? Do you want it? Are you willing to go to any length to get it? If not, you ain't going to get it. What you will get is a whole bunch of little technicolored buttons some of these meetings give out to wear on your keychain. You might even get a cake or two with a candle on it, but I'll tell you what you will not get. Peace of mind, hope, serenity, contentment. Any of the things that makes life worth living, they'll simply be elusive. They won't be there. Because you haven't made that decision. Don't be like an Al-Anon, make a snap judgment. Make a decision, for God's sake. At some of these, we balked. Christ had 12 disciples. Alcoholics Anonymous has 12 steps. One of Christ's disciples was Judas. One of the steps is Judas. It doesn't make any difference what the number is. You know which step it is? It's the one step you really believe you don't have to take.
That's the Judas step. It's the one step you really say, that don't apply to me. That's the one that'll throw you. Always. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. That word suggested just excites the living daylights out of a drunk, don't it? Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Now he takes that and runs with it. Suggestive in Alcoholics Anonymous, freely translated, means you damn well better. I had a friend of mine who used to teach skydiving at the Mojave Airport out in the desert. And he had a little acrylic tag like this made up that he hung on the rings of all those parachutes. It says this ring is meant to be suggestive only. He said he never had anyone ever fail to follow that suggestion. Or at least come back and complain about it. Is a skydiver's life more valuable than the life of a drunk? Are we that foolish? Or do we just not pay attention? Probably the most misleading statement in all of Alcoholics Anonymous is also in that part we read. There are those, too, who are gravely emotionally and mentally ill, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Do you know how many people have been deluded into believing they can cure a severe emotional or mental dysfunction simply because they are honest and die or kill themselves after several years of sobriety? I've seen this happen too often to discount it. That's not what it means. It simply means that if you can admit that alcohol is a tremendous problem to you and those around you, that the chances are you too can stay sober, even though you will be like Clancy for the rest of your natural life. Doesn't mean anything else. Keep it simple. Most of us don't even know what honesty means. I didn't. I knew what dishonesty was, but I didn't know what honesty was. And I made the mistake once again of going to this guy and asking him, feed mine, telling me what honesty was as it applied to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I got a good education, and I still couldn't figure this one out. And he said, well, he said, I'll tell you a little story. He said, let's assume one day that there was a man and a woman who were both married to someone else, and they get together and decide to go to a motel together. And they go up to the desk clerk to register, and he looks at them and he says, are you married? And they say, yes, we are. He gives them a key, they go inside. Now, he said, you tell me how honesty would have applied to that. Well, I hadn't been in that position too recently at that time. It didn't sound like such a bad idea, but it seemed obvious what the thing was, you know. And I said, well, yeah, I could see that. If they were honest, they just said, yeah, we're married, but not to each other. He looked at me and he said, no, that's not it. He said, that would have been the truth, though, wouldn't it? And it would have eliminated a sin of omission. But it has nothing to do with honesty. And for 3 more months, I puzzled that damn thing out. And I was in one rare mood one day. I planned on killing him if he didn't tell me what the answer to that damn thing was. And I said, what about this thing, honesty, and the man, the woman, the motel? I said, how about that? How does that apply? He said, do you mean to tell me you haven't figured that out yet? And I said, no, I ain't. He said, young man, you astound me. He said, if they'd have been honest, they would not have been there. That had never occurred to me. But I'll tell you what did. Truth deals with facts. Honesty deals with integrity. Honesty is action. And action, they tell me, is the magic word in Alcoholics Anonymous. Action now. Truth is important. The next time somebody tells you they're a thief and you invite them home with you and they steal all you got, don't come to an AA meeting complaining about them. They didn't tell you they were honest. They said they were a thief. Thieves steal. And how many times have we all been deluded because we believed someone was telling us, was being honest when they were just simply telling us the truth, and we didn't have brains enough to know the difference? Truth is important. Honesty is critical. Be honest. Action is the magic word, isn't it? Right after the ABCs, where we stop reading, a remarkable thing happens in this book. It says, being convinced we were at step 3, and step 3 is italicized. A little further over in that same chapter, it says, this is step 4, and step 4 is italicized. There are 2 steps in chapter 5, how it works. 3 and 4, trust God, clean house. Took me 20-some years to figure that out. You people are getting a hell of a break today, do you know it? And I'm smart. Step 4. Beautiful step. And you'll find there's 2 kinds of people in Alcoholics Anonymous. Those you cannot make take a 4th step and those you cannot keep from taking a 4th step. I come from the first kind. I asked a guy once, when did you take the 5th step? He said, when the statute of limitations run out. Sounded like a good idea. If you don't take a 4th, you don't take a 5th, right? So I didn't take a 4th for a long time. This joker grabbed me one day and he said, kid, you've been freeloading off this long enough. It's time you took an inventory. What the hell? I took an inventory. Wrote it out in a longhand. Seen the syntax was right. Punctuated it properly. Edited it somewhat for readability. Put a little addendum with this resentment list they talk about in here. Put it in a loose leaf notebook and handed it to him. He took one look at it. He said, "What's this, a movie script?" I said, "No, sir, that is my inventory." He thumbed through it. He said, "Ah, I'm an actor." He said, "I know a script when I see one. This one won't play." I handed it back to him. I said, "That is not a movie script. That is my inventory." He said, "It is not." I said, "It is." He said, "It is not. What you've done, my young friend, is you've itemized your behavioral patterns. And I have no doubt that you've edited so damn well that neither you nor I will ever know how you was ever wrong about anything." With that, he reached his coat pocket, took out a small notebook, tore out one sheet, handed it to me. He says, "Take your inventory on this." I said, "I can't." He said, "You can." I said, "I cannot. It's too small." He said, "It is not." He said, "Tell me, my young friend, did you ever knowingly take anything that did not belong to you?" I said, "Of course I have. You know that." He said, "Then write down thief." He said, "Have you ever told a little story you knew did not match the facts in the case?" I said, "Yes, I've done that too. You know that." He said, "Then write down liar." I don't know about you, but I don't like the way this damn inventory was starting to turn out. He said, "You ever played around with the girls when you was married to somebody else?" I said, "Yeah, you know that too." He said, "Then write down cheat." He said, "Oh, incidentally, at the top of that page, would you write down atheist?" I said, "I told you I was a Baptist." He said, "What's the difference?" Now, you know, that sounded like a very crude, rude remark. Except that it opened my eyes to something I had been blinded to previously all my life. Do you know a deep-seated religious conviction is quite often a tremendous obstacle to a spiritual concept? Do you know how many times people have said, "If you're not a good Baptist, what good are you? If you're not a good Catholic, you ain't no good at all." And the greatest of all spiritual concepts is only two words long and cannot exist. Our Father does not exist. One religion, unfortunately, gets in the way. But when our Father exists, there are no blacks or whites. There is no men or women. There is no Yankees and Chicanos and Frenchmen and all of this stuff. That no longer exists. Our Father now exists. And what we find now is people in trouble. People some of us can help. Some people are very dangerous, so be careful. But our Father now exists. And spirituality now exists. And we now can do what one of us could never have done. We now exist. She, I, we now exist. So simple, and yet so difficult. There is one thing that bothered me. In taking an inventory in this manner, I found out that being a thief did not bother me. And that bothered me. And I went to him and I says, being a thief don't bother me. He said, "Why should it?" He said, "We and alcoholics are not anonymous, are not moralists." He said, "It's not up to any of us to tell anyone else how they should live in the ever-changing morals of an ever-changing society, for Christ's sake." He said, "All we're trying to do is to find out what the moral obstacles are to a spiritual concept." But he said, "Tell me something. You said lying did bother you." I said, "It does." He said, "How are you going to steal without lying?" And he had me for a little while. But I thought about it, and I found a way. Almost everything I have told you so far here this morning, I have stolen from something or someone. And weave them together in the form of a story that I hope will help someone else find what I have found in this way of life. And now being a thief doesn't bother me, because I freely give what I have found to whoever wants it, with no strings attached whatsoever. And by taking an inventory in this manner, I discovered something else too. Quite some time before this, I had tried to get rid of some character traits that were defective. And that's not what those steps say. It says to get rid of the defects of character, not the trait of character. Everybody here has character traits, commonly called a personality. There is no way you can get rid of those character traits. You have to learn to use them wisely. And do you know the character trait of a novelist is identically the same character trait of a pathological liar? The only thing is that the novelist does not use it selfishly. And they have written some wonderful books. Look at the Bronte sisters who wrote Jane Eyre and Wuthering Heights. Beautiful literature that has lived long after they have gone. But do you know they wrote under the name of Bell? And what about Mark Twain, who wrote some of the greatest of American literature? Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer and A Jumping Frog of Calaveras County. And yet his real name was Samuel Clemens. With these people, these were nom de plumes, pen names. With me, they were aliases. But remarkably similar, wasn't it? And then I found that all I had to do was to learn how to use the trait that God had given me for the benefit of God's kids and myself, and it was no longer defective. And that's all they ever asked me to do, was to get rid of the defects of character. not the traits of character. And it became so much simpler now, so much easier to understand. There is one more word in there that will bother a lot of people. It's called a resentment. A resentment to an alcoholic is simply a natural aversion to truth, or it is the courage of a coward. And you get a resentment because someone done, or you think someone done something that's detrimental to you, and you'll do absolutely nothing but think about it. And the more you think, the worse it gets. And it isn't long before you're filled with a burning rage and he's out there enjoying life. Imagine the power to actually kill. When I was going to school some years ago, I remember reading Shakespeare, and in Caesar there's a line I've never forgotten. He was explaining what he intended to do, and someone said, "Beware, Caesar, beware." And he said, "A coward dies many times before his death. The valiant never tastes of death but once." How many times do you want to die? Is once enough? Or do you want to do it over and over and over? Did you ever read that? Really read and listen to that serenity prayer. You know what it says? It gives you the key to the whole thing when it says, "God, grant me this serenity to accept the things I cannot change. My ways, if I don't approve of it, I ain't going to accept it." There's a hell of a lot of things I don't approve of, both in and out of AA. Especially some of you people that drive them little Japanese beer cans on the freeway when I'm in a hurry. That doesn't say one thing even about acceptance, does it? Acceptance is not important. God's gift of serenity is important. And with that you can live with the things that are. It makes no difference now what it is. Sometimes you will seem almost immune to human feelings. When my grandson died, was killed in a car wreck, my oldest grandson, where would I have been if I'd have depended on my emotions to go back into a family I had torn apart by my actions in the worst, most stressful part of human life, in death of a child? I couldn't have done it. Serenity. The peace of mind to live with what is, what apparently is the will of God, whether we understand that will or not. And remember, it's God as we understand Him, not God as we have created Him. And the next line, so important, the courage to change the things we can. And a sponsor that knows the difference is the way it ought to end, but it don't. I guess it's all right the way it's written. Now, I jumped over step three so I could come back to it. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. You know how many times I've had someone come up to me and say, "Hey, buddy, I've turned my will and my life over to the care of God. Now He's going to go to work for me." I got news for you. I went to seminary several years as a child, and I can tell you that there is a record in the Bible of God having gotten a job, worked for 6 days and six nights, created the heavens and the earth and all therein, and took a day off. And there is no record He ever went to work ever again for anyone. None. Don't exist. Now tell me, fellas, when you turned your will and your life over to her, whoever she may have been, who went to work? And if you still don't believe it, Monday morning rolls around, walk into the boss's office and say, "From now on you're working for me, and watch what happens to you." When you turn your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand God, you are applying to God for a job, and you will do God's work. He will not do yours. But I'll tell you a remarkable thing that happened. You now find out the worst you can do is break even, where before that was the best you could have hoped for. Because the Bible says it rains on the just and the unjust. You still have flats, but they're in your driveway now. Your brakes will still go out, but you'll see about them before you get on one of these high-speed highways. And you'll get them fixed. And you'll stay sober wondering what the hell can go wrong next. But you'll find out that you are beginning to break even at the very lowest point of your life. And it has somehow reversed itself in some remarkable way, and all you've done is stay sober and try to help some other drunk to find what you have found without expecting anything. So simple, isn't it? And for heaven's sakes, gentlemen, do not ask God to bring you a woman. You are putting Him in the role of a pimp. Will not like it, I'll tell you right now. When you read the next chapter in this book, you'll find it is entitled "Into Action." Unfortunately, it is not entitled "Into Thinking." And every step, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11, are all itemized and italicized in order in that one chapter. And a couple of them only have a paragraph devoted to them. So now you're on your honor now. You're on your own now to do what you know is right for your benefit now and the benefit of others. No directions now. It's just you and God now. And maybe a sponsor. Nothing more. You're on your honor. That is the most rigid of all systems, the honor system. And if you don't think so, try it for a while. How many times have you heard someone come into a meeting and say, well, I really can't take this cake because I've done something I shouldn't have done here a while back and I've only got so much time. Who made them do this? Honor? Their conscience? God? I don't know. But I've seen it so often I don't discount the honor system. And you're on your honor now. When you come back next year and say, well, I want a cake with a candle on it, they'll give it to you. And there's only one way that you can regret it. Don't earn it. And you'll regret it. And it is absolute proof, I believe, that you can live yourself into good thinking where you could never have thought yourself into good living. It's simple. It's easy. Every one of us have got today, don't we? Do you think they hang medals on yesterday's heroes? No, they don't. With a Navy Cross and a buck, I can buy coffee anywhere I go. But I don't want to forget the buck. Yesterday's heroes are great, and longevity has some meaning. It'll stop an argument with a newcomer every time. But let's not forget. Let's none of us forget that we're drunks. We've got today. Let's make the best of it. We stole that, incidentally, I think, out of Psalms, where it says, this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. In AA, we just say a day at a time to keep it simple, don't we? And you'll find so many things, and so many people in AA really believe the Bible stole them from us. The truth is, we stole them from the Bible. Did you ever hear somebody say, walk like you talk? I'm going to tell you something now about me. Christ said it first, and I stole it from him. If I do not my Father's work, believe not what I say. I would lead you astray, whether I wanted to or not. My actions are always my greatest prayers, aren't they? Did you ever pray for something and act in exact opposite and see which happened? Did you ever pray to stay sober and grab a jug and drink it? What happened? What are your prayers? God does not need to speak every language of this planet. He needs to only look and see what we want by the way we act. And if you're running towards that wall back there at 20 miles an hour and you say, God help me, he'll hit it at 30 because he believes that's what you want. Your actions are so important. Into action. For a long time, that's as far as I read. That time of my life, I did not have a wife and I did not want a wife. So I did not read the chapter to the wives. I know some of you fellas feel the same way. I got news for you. If you're sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, you're probably going to get a wife, whether you want one or not. I would damn well advise you to read that chapter to the wives because there are four types of alcoholics that are graphically described in that one chapter, five types in a doctor's opinion, and one more type in a basic text. That's 10 types of alcoholics that were known in 1939 when this book was published. And God only knows how many types there are today. And if that's not enough to get you over your bigotry that says, if you didn't drink like I drank, you're not an alcoholic, I don't know what would be. What about the family afterwards? Don't have a family? You don't want one of them either? Got news for you, fellas. You're not going to find a 40-year-old virgin orphan in AA. Or Al-Anon either, for that matter. You'll get a family whether you want one or not. Now, I've got three daughters. Beverly's got one. That's four daughters. I would rather raise saber-toothed tigers than daughters. We get along remarkably well. In fact, Beverly's daughter's here with us today. Her grandmother lives here in Calgary. We brought her up so she could visit with her grandmother. But we're going to take her back home and send her back to San Francisco. That's the way to handle kids. If you have any doubts about it, kids are simply God's way of getting even. There's something else I would not have known if I had not read that chapter. You know, it's okay to live in a good home, drive a good car, wear decent clothes, have money in the bank. It says the material is all right as long as it always follows the spiritual but never precedes it. Keep it simple. It makes sense. What about the employer? I don't know about you. Hell, I know about you. Money has never been an incentive for me to work. Poverty is an incentive for me to work if money makes. And I retired the 1st of March and I don't intend to do any more work. And I had several people say, well, now that you've retired, what are you going to do? You go, where are you going to work? If I was going to work, I wouldn't have retired. Did it ever occur to you? Now, Beverly hasn't retired. She's still eating. She's still working. It's the way it ought to be. Please, I think that's the way it ought to be. But if I had not have read that chapter, I would have never known what the five greatest enemies of the alcoholic are. You know what they are? Resentment, jealousy, envy, frustration, and the third most common used word in the entire world. Of every known language, fear is used more times than any other two words, fear. You might ask yourself, how does Alcoholics Anonymous overcome fear? It does not overcome fear. It overcomes the causes of fear. Fear is God-given. The most common cause of fear, incidentally, is called embarrassment. And you will not take part in your own recovery because you're so afraid you will embarrass yourself. You will. I'll tell you right now. I said once in a meeting, I've done everything there is to do except make love to another man. Another guy in a meeting said, if you've had as many blackouts as you say you had, how do you know you didn't? Oh, you will embarrass yourself, but you see, by taking part in your own recovery, you get over the embarrassment. Now you can say it if it needs to be said. And I'll tell you something else. If you say it first about you, you will be a damn sight more kind to you than anyone else will be. So say it first. Loneliness. Loneliness. Do you realize, girls, that loneliness has gotten you into positions you would have never gotten into for any other reason except you were just damned lonely? And all you ever really wanted was somebody to put their arm around your shoulders and tell you it's going to be okay. I'm sorry that men like me took advantage of women like you when you were at your lowest. I'm even more sorry that many still do. How does Alcoholics Anonymous overcome this? Do you ever realize that Alcoholics Anonymous is made up of two fundamental component parts? The program, as it is laid out in this book, and the fellowship, which is the other half. And when you get involved in the fellowship, when you get involved in H&I, general service, when you get involved in central office, intergroup, whatever you call it, when you get involved in a meeting and you come early and set it up and stay late to take it apart for people like me who haven't yet recovered, you will find that your loneliness begins to disappear because you're becoming involved in the lives of others. It dissipates now. I've heard many people say something that I do not fully agree with. They have said that the traditions are to the in-group what the steps are to the individual. I don't believe this. I believe the traditions are to the individual what the individual is to the group. And if the traditions mean nothing to you, the group will mean nothing to you. And all you will ever do is go to meeting after meeting after meeting, always with the same reoccurring problem, always with the same trouble, always seeking the same solution because you have never become involved in anything. But when you do become involved and a loneliness begins to disappear in a meeting, you'll find there are two or three people there you just can't stand. You just can't stand them. And then one day they won't be there. And you'll say, where's George? Where's Betty? Is she okay? Where's Helen? And now you'll find that you're concerned about people you didn't even like. And something about you has changed. A psychic change now has taken place. Retribution. There's a good one. Oh, my God, there are so many of us who are afraid, scared to death that someone's going to do to us what we've already done to someone else. And in our agony, God watches us and says, just leave him alone and let him suffer. He deserves it. He's earned it. It's his. Don't take it away from him. How does Alcoholics Anonymous overcome this? I used to think you people who wouldn't say the Lord's Prayer were a bunch of atheists. I'm going to tell you something. You're smarter than I am. Was. I'm smarter now than I used to be. There's one part of that Lord's Prayer that I never even noticed, even after seminary. It says, God shaft me just like I'm going to shaft him when I get my hands on him. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Do you know what the miracle of forgiveness really is? You can't forgive anyone, nor can I. I don't have that power. But when I say, God, forgive them, for they know not what they are doing, I am forgiven. They ain't. If you got a personality like mine, you'll just delight in knowing you're off the hook and they're still on it. But that's the miracle of forgiveness. By forgiving them, you are forgiven, whatever it was. And you learn now to live with it. And now you can say, I no longer regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. But God, don't ever let it happen again. Take me first before I take that next drink. And you're serious now. And now you can freely walk out on a night sky that's beautiful and look up into the heavens and say, God, give me exactly what I deserve, no more and no less. And if you can't say that, what are you doing that is so shameful? What is it that you don't want, what you deserve? When you look at your life, you will see that you have always gotten just exactly what you deserve. The trouble is you just didn't get all of it. And that's where retribution comes in. But if you work steps 8 and 9 with dignity now, with honor, with integrity, You're not going back to apologize. The Constitution of the United States has got 20-some amendments to it. Not one of them says, we're sorry we wrote it. Going back now, a different person to correct a wrong that shouldn't be left alone. Sometimes they'll want nothing to do with you. Sometimes you'll have to say, I'm sorry, and walk away. But most of the time, you will have done what needed to be done, and now you will be different somehow. You'll be free now. Free from the bondage of self, which is the only bondage a drunk was ever under anyway. He was bonded only to himself. And he knew the loneliness that he found in divorcing himself from the fellowship of man and the Spirit of God. And we knew loneliness like no one else knew. But in this fellowship, we have once again found that camaraderie, that singleness of purpose, that uniqueness that's so critically important. And for God's sake, let's not destroy it. There are some 212 different anonymous programs, all based on this same concept. The fellowship, though, is different in every case. Do you know Al-Anon and AA work identically the same program? It's just the fellowship that's different, for Christ's sakes. When someone asks you what program you're working, tell them it's the one that's in the book. If they ask you what your trouble is, you can go ahead and describe it. They even got a Sexaholics Anonymous in Southern California now. I was going to go down and wait till somebody had a slip, till Bev had a talk with him. Well, what the hell? The fellowship is so critical. We of Alcoholics Anonymous. Let's never forget that. Let's never forget what the preamble says. Let's not sell it short. It's obvious to any of you looking up here, it does not grow hair. It just supposed to show a drunk a way to live his life so enjoyable that drinking is no longer a problem, and that he can recoil from it as if it was a hot flame. And once it was a thing he wanted most of all. Alcoholics Anonymous is a simple program. Let's keep it simple. Let's not get it involved in all this other stuff. We're not psychiatrists. We're not doctors. We're not lawyers. We're drunks. Let's never forget that. And I had an experience about that here recently. When I retired, I had to get my birth certificate to prove to them idiots down there I'm still alive. And when I looked at my birth certificate, I noticed something strange about it. Now, if anyone had asked me what my name was, I would have told them, it's Hugh Lawrence Douglas. I've been called that for 63 years. My birth certificate said Hugh L. Douglas. I went down to the Social Security office and asked the girl, I said, what's my name? She said, Hugh L. Douglas. Tell you something. My father had a middle name. My mother had a middle name. My brothers and my sisters had a middle name. I never had a middle name. Now I can go to ACA and tell them I'm an abused child. Probably that's why I drank. Just found out why I drank. Didn't have a middle name. Only got a middle initial. I've been deprived of something. If I'd never known about it, I guess it wouldn't have bothered me. It's getting close to that time, isn't it? In step 10, you will find a very simple thing if you keep it very simple. All you're going to do now is to say, I'm wiser today than I was yesterday. What's so wrong with that? When you can admit that you are now wrong about something that you really believed you were right about, or when you can see your way is wrong for you or others, all you're saying is, I'm wiser today than I once was. And what about step 11? My goodness. Now you're going to get the job that you applied for in step 3. And you'll find that you'll always have the spiritual strength to do what needs to be done, even when your heart is aching and breaking. Even when she just walked out and left you, you'll still go to a drunk and talk to him about things. Because the spiritual power you prayed for is there. The power to carry it out will now be available to you at all times. And now you have a different source of power. And you're not depending on those idiotic human emotions. A great England philosopher once said, life is a tragedy to those who feel, a comedy to those who think. Will you want to laugh or cry? The choice is yours. God has given us the bounty of the earth. Let's not pollute it. Let's do His work, and let's do it well, wherever we can, with whoever we can. Let's not question everything. If somebody says, I'm in trouble, help if you can help. And if you can't help, have brains enough to send them to someone who can. A sponsor is not some kind of a genius. A sponsor is a guy that's been here long enough to know where the bodies are buried. And when you got a problem, he says, why don't you go talk to Joe about that? He solved it. You know what my sponsor done in my fifth step? He sent me to a Catholic priest in Missouri. That's heresy. You know what the priest told me? He said, if you expect me to keep this a secret, you're kidding yourself. I said, what are you talking about? Priests are supposed to keep a secret. He says, I'm an AA priest. I'm different. He said, you've got to learn to tell your story to someone. And when I know it, and God knows it, and you know it, what's the secret? What are you hiding now? You're just as sick as your secrets, aren't you? And you will always be that sick. Because you'll be scared to death that somebody's going to rat on you. And they will. AA is like Peyton Place. It's a very small community. If you don't want it known about, don't do it. That simple. Keep it that simple. In closing, I'd like to tell you about step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. It does not say the steps. I'd like to clarify that. What are some of the principles? What is so hard about duty, responsibility, and obligation? What's so hard about kindness, courtesy, and consideration? What's so difficult about honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness? What's so hard about these things? Do you realize courtesy alone will save your life out there on that damned Highway 1? When you just don't try to claim 18 feet of real estate that you can only own for a fraction of a second from some other idiot just as idiotic as you are, you could save your life with courtesy alone. Has it ever occurred to you that alcoholics have one great problem, and it's that they cannot walk through an open door. They walk into it and stop because they've never learned what courtesy is. Not yet. And you will notice when you pick up a cup of coffee and start to take a drink out of it, somebody slaps your arm and spills it right down. And you look at them and smile. What you think may be different than what you ought to say. You are the publicity agents for Alcoholics Anonymous as I am. Did that ever occur to you? And I don't want to hear about you being thrown out of one of these restaurants now because you give the waitress a hard time. What you will really do is give AA a black eye. And somebody yet unborn will not find what you have found because someone will say, you don't want to go around those people. They're the most idiotic, discourteous people I ever met in my life. Christ raised Lazarus from the dead and said, take up your bed and walk. Don't leave your mess behind you, Lazarus. If you want to know who the winners are in Alcoholics Anonymous, look at the chairs when this meeting is over. The messes that's left behind will not come from the winners. The winners will take up their beds and walk. So many centuries ago, when God had a message he wanted carried on this earth, he looked around to see who could do it for him better than anyone else. And he found a group of people who were very stiff-necked and self-willed. They were the tribe of Israel. And he gave them the commandment of carrying the message of one God throughout the world. And in spite of all the shame, humiliation, and degradation that have been heaped up on their shoulders over these many centuries, they have carried that message so well that there are only two fundamental religions in the entire world who do not fully subscribe to the one God theory. And they're coming around. I won't live to see it, but it will happen. One God. I know some of you are going to say, oh, it's God as we understand him. Please don't say that to me, because all you're going to do is say, I ain't read chapter 11 yet, where it says united under one God. Many ways to worship, many ways to pray, many ways to get out of doing either if you want to, but one God nonetheless. When you read the Ten Commandments, you will find moral laws. I told you how I violated three of them, a liar, a cheat, and a thief. I could tell you about the other seven, but it isn't important. But all of them I violated. Was my way of living an honor to my parents, even though they may not have deserved the honor? Did I observe the commandment or not? Your moral laws. We can live on this rock, not blow ourselves off of it if we obey those moral laws. Otherwise, look out, Charlie, we could do it this afternoon and we all know it. But it's not spiritual. And I looked around for that spiritual law. I couldn't find it for a long time. I knew that Christ was born for that reason, or I believed it, but I could never find it. And then one day I did something I know better than to do. I got into an argument with a woman. I know better than to argue with women. I still do it. I know better, but I still do it. I haven't recovered fully yet, I guess. And I was going to prove to her something was in the Bible. And in looking it up, I found that spiritual rule. When God was there, Christ was asked, what is the greatest of all the commandments? He said, there are two. To love your God with all your heart and all your mind and all your soul, and love your neighbor as you love yourself. And he had given us the spiritual commandment of love. And for the first 300 years after his crucifixion, this was carried extremely well by what is today known as the first century Christians, the foundation of the Oxford groups, the foundation of Alcoholics Anonymous on that one basic principle. Those who can help, helping those who need help. And it worked extremely well. Until Constantine became emperor of Rome, the first Christian emperor. And he got himself a little blue flag with a white cross on it, went off on a holy war. Sanctioned the churches. and cash flow became important, and the message became dormant. For 1,500 years, that message of love just laid there. Oh, there were some, Luther and others, who tried to revive it, but they were not successful. And once again, God looked around, and he wanted this message carried, and once again, he looked around for someone who could carry it for him, and one more time. He found a group of people who were the most bullheaded, stiff-necked, self-willed, egocentric, hard-nosed bunch he could find anywhere in the world, alcoholics. And in a blinding flash of light, he made a deal with one of them. He said, Bill, I'll make a deal with you. If you will carry the message of love throughout the world, you will never drink again. And for 53 years, Alcoholics Anonymous has carried this message of love, one drunk to another, so well that we have risen from 2 to 2 million sober alcoholics in this world today. All on that one message, a message of love. And you will carry that message of love in a world full of hate, and it'll take every bit of the grim, bullheaded determination you have mastered to do it, but you will do it, or you will drink. It's just that simple. And how many times have you heard someone say what I want to say to you? You loved me when I could not love myself. And you have taught me how to love you. And for that, I am extremely grateful. Thank you very much.